Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the Soundcheck Podcast from WNYC in New York.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Sam and Dave, Otis Redding, Isaac Hayes, the Staple Singers, this band, Booker T and the MGs, these are just some of the soul stars whose careers were established at Stax Records. The label began in a Memphis garage and went on to produce hundreds of hit songs, and Stax was more than just a record label, according to Memphis music historian Robert Gordon. In his new book, Gordon argues that Stax was a refuge from the harsh racial realities of the 1960s South, and a reflection of the turbulent civil rights movement churning just beyond its doors. The book is called Respect Yourself, Stax Records and the Soul Explosion. And Robert Gordon joins me now, appropriately from Memphis. Robert, welcome to Soundcheck.
Howdy, howdy. Thanks for having me.
Now, you hear a lot going on in this song, Green Onions, by Booker T and the MGs. What's in here that's not just a neat pop instrumental?
Well, I think there's a lot of tension in this song. I think you hear the underlying racial animosity in Memphis. You hear the wariness of Booker and Steve of the public outside, you know.
Booker being the black keyboardist, Booker T. Jones,
right,
and Steve being Steve Cropper, the white guitarist. So it's a mixed race group.
Exactly, and it sort of began as an accident in the early 1960s, and the music worked, you know. So, Booker told me if it had been a conscious effort, it would have been foolish to undertake this as a conscious effort at that time in that place.
So, Stax, you know, both through this band and through the way the company would grow over the years, does become this kind of refuge from a Memphis that, like much of the South, is riven with racial strife. How did that happen? I mean, it's a white guy and his sisters, Jim Stewart and his sister Estelle Axton, who are the founders of the record label.
I'm going to take it to Dewey Phillips for a second, who was a disc jockey in Memphis, a white disc jockey who transcended race, played R&B to a white and a black audience, was the first one to play Elvis Presley. And when Dewey would greet his audience, he would say, "All right, good people." So he wasn't talking to black and he wasn't talking to white. He was talking to good people. And I think that Jim and Estelle, the founders of Stax, were good people. And they said, there's this madness going on outside about people who hate people based on the color of their skin, but we're just going to run our business and deal with good people.
So they open up in this Memphis garage. Then they eventually take over this disused theater in what is... Well, it was a black neighborhood mostly in Memphis.
Change. It was a neighborhood in transition, change. The early days of white flight, yeah.
Right. So how did Stax find its artists? Was it as simple as these are the people who walk in off the street through the front door?
It was as simple as that. They walked in through the front door into a record store. Mm-hmm. Estelle, the sister, established a record store on the candy counter of the theater, you know, like where you'd buy your popcorn.
Right.
And Steve Cropper was a clerk in that store. So they would kind of, you know, get to talking to people. And Booker said he always knew he could hear the music coming from the back of the place, from the theater, but he never could get back there until until the one session. But these guys would, Estelle and Steve, you know, were on the lookout. And the talent, can I just list the talent? Some of the talent that walked in the door.
Sure.
Walked in the door. I mean, Rufus Thomas, Carla Thomas, William Bell, Otis Redding. It just goes, you know, the Mad Lads, these were people, the Barkays, people who lived in the neighborhood who walked in the door.
And you mentioned that Booker T, you know, he's hearing the music in the back, but he can't get back there till his first session. Was his first session the Carla and Rufus Thomas song?
Exactly right. He was in school, and David Porter, the songwriter who would compose a lot of the hits like Soul Man and Hold On, I'm Coming with Isaac Hayes. He was in there with Rufus and Carla. So David went because he wanted to see what the session was like. When they said, hey, we need a baritone sax player, David went and got his friend Booker T out of algebra class.
Out of school, yeah, that's a great story. And the results is really the first hit for Stax Records. And as Robert Gordon is telling us, these guys, they just walked in off the street. Rufus Thomas and his daughter Carla Thomas with 'Cause I Love You. That is Carla and Rufus Thomas with 'Cause I Love You, recorded in the Stax studio in the early 60s, early hit for the burgeoning soul label there in Memphis, Tennessee, the subject of the book Respect Yourself, Stax Records and the Soul Explosion by Robert Gordon, who's with me on Soundcheck. And again, in the background there, Booker T is playing baritone sax, not keyboard yet, although that would come later.
He didn't even consider himself a keyboard player. He considered himself a guitarist,
which
is wild
anything.
To think about.
Yeah.
He could play anything.
There are so many unusual and improbable stories of how Jim and Estelle, the founders of Stax, got to meet these various musicians. None of them more improbable than the story of how they met Otis Redding.
This guy in Georgia had cut a hit. And the people in New York thought maybe he would gel well with Booker T and the MGs. So they brought him up from Macon, Georgia to Memphis. And the guys were waiting for him outside. He pulls up. Everybody talks about the driver getting out and starting to unload gear. And they go, oh, no, man, it's okay. We're a recording studio, and we actually have the gear inside, and it's set up. Mm-hmm. So the guy brought in food and clothes. He just lugged the stuff for the star. And the star was a showman. And they couldn't really get a groove going in this studio. He was more of a stage player.
He would play the guitar behind his back and that sort of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
So it was getting really frustrating, and people had to get out of the studio for their club gigs. Al Jackson, the drummer, had promised the driver he would give him a listen, and he comes running down at the end, and Steve Cropper says, okay, guy, you know, show me what you do. And when the guy started to sing... When Otis started to sing, Steve ran outside and got, you know, he had to tell Louis Steinberg, get your bass out of the car, man. I need you inside.
Yeah, you got to hear this.
And they cut what became his first single on Stax, These Arms of Mine.
The story is so funny, but it sort of reflects really well on their openness to people
exactly.
who were unknown. And boy, did they profit from it, because Otis Redding would churn out hit after hit, including this one.
What you want, honey, you got it. And what you need, baby, you got it. All I'm asking for a little respect when I come home.
To fade it out. I just want to hear the rest of that.
I'm dancing, John. I'm dancing.
Oh, man. Respect. The original version from Otis Redding, recorded in 1965 on Stax Records. And Robert, I was saying that, you know, they would profit from their open minds and open ears. 2 years later in 67, Aretha Franklin has a huge hit with it. So those publishing royalties are coming in. So as your story progresses, it progresses sort of in tandem with the sanitation strike there in Memphis, the racial divide, Martin Luther King coming because of the sanitation strike. And, of course, that's where he is assassinated. And the place where he is killed is a place that's kind of part of the Stax lore, isn't it?
Absolutely. The Lorraine Motel was about the only place in town where the Stax people could go relax. There was no air conditioning in the theater that was their recording studio, so they would go swim in the pool, you know, white and black together. They could get served in the coffee shop at the hotel together. And all their artists who came from out of town to record with them would stay at the Lorraine. It was black-owned. It was downtown, not too far away. Yeah, it was their clubhouse.
And, you know, obviously the death of Martin Luther King, a major turning point for the country, but for Stax as well, death rears its ugly head a couple of times. And, of course, the big one for them is Otis Redding. Is that really a turning point? Is that when things begin to go bad for Stax?
In a period of between the end of or middle of December and early April when Dr. King's assassinated, they get three pieces of terrible, terrible news that would certainly have taken most companies to their knees. Those three news bits being the death of Otis Redding, and not only Otis Redding, but the Barquets.
Most of the band, yeah.
Who were kids from the neighborhood who had worked in the, one was a shoeshine boy in the barbershop next to the theater, you know, and they all had just hung out with the MGs, learned to play, had a hit with Soulfinger. They were the kids, you know, and so the next generation was wiped out with Otis.
You actually, in the book, you actually list the names and ages of everybody who was on that small plane that went down. And, you know, it's just heartbreaking to see 18, 19. And by contrast, Otis Redding and the pilot at 26 are by far the old men in this group.
It is absolutely heartbreaking. And the account I got from Ben Cawley, the survivor of the plane crash, just spine tingling. I mean, but the third piece of news is that a deal that Stax has signed with Atlantic, which Jim hadn't read before signing, and he had signed away ownership of everything that was put out. It was devastating news.
You talked to Jerry Wexler, who was the head of Atlantic, who did this deal with Jim Stewart and Stax, and he protests that he knew nothing about it, that his lawyers slipped it in, and that when Atlantic was in turn being swallowed up by Warner Brothers, he said, hey, I want to do right by these guys and give them their master tapes. And the folks at Warner said, no, we have a deal, and that's how we're going to do it. You make it pretty clear that you're not buying Jerry Wexler's story.
He told me that story that you just told me in answer to my first question to him, which was, you were in New York and Stax was this little label in Memphis. How did you hear about them? My question was as innocent as that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was the first thing I asked him. And within about 60 seconds, he was defending, one might say, protesting too much.
Yeah. Well, you do say that. I think that's the exact phrase you use. He doth protest too much. So, as you say, it's a triple blow to the folks at Stax. And yet, it does not bring them to their knees. They, you know, they sort of
soldier on.
They
had a secret weapon.
And what was that?
That was a guy named Al Bell. He was what they called the Otis Redding of business, you know. He was, and I called him a rocket in wingtips. He helped Stax figure out how to come back from this devastation, which was to realize they had all the parts that they used to have. They had songwriters, they had artists, they had a recording studio, and he put all that to work in creating the Soul Explosion, which was the simultaneous release of 28 albums and 27 singles.
And one of those songwriters would become a kind of game changer, a landmark in African American music, and that is Isaac Hayes. And man, he just went from strength to strength to the point where, you know, he did the famous theme from the movie Shaft, which, you know, forget about winning a Grammy, he won an Oscar for this, which was, again, simply unheard of. Possibly the most famous piece of pop music to have come out of Stax. Here is Isaac Hayes with the theme from Shaft.
Who's the Black Friday? a dick, that's a sex machine to all the chicks. You're damn right. Who is the man that would risk his neck for his brother, man? Can you dig it? Who's the cat that won't cop out when there's things you're all about? Right on.
Isaac Hayes and the award-winning theme from the film Shaft. A high watermark for the record label Stax. Mm-hmm. And Robert, I said, you know, pop music. You make the distinction that Motown was making pop music. Stax, for much of the 60s, was making soul music. But as the 70s happen, as Al Bell is working his magic with all these radio stations, they really begin to become more diffuse, more eclectic. And it seems that as the House of Cards goes taller and taller, the whole thing begins to waver and then eventually crumbles. What was at the heart of that?
I think that Al ultimately was motivated to give middle-class existence to black people who had been denied middle-class existence up to that point in time. Al wants to become basically what Atlantic had been to them, mm-hmm. for other labels. So he is signing labels and signing artists and signing hits and distributing and releasing. And he begins to expand the staff at Stax. At one point, there's over 200 people on staff. The numbers got so big, things got out of control, and Isaac was this goose laying golden eggs every time. The whole second period of Stax is really built on the success of Isaac Hayes, mm-hmm. as an artist, as a recording artist.
And on a cozy relationship with a local bank, which also turns out...
Again, you know, the word improbable returns. It so happens that Stax is this stream of money, and a guy at the bank realizes he can do some embezzling, begins to forge signatures. Mm-hmm. Stax is overextended more than they know. And then, well, the ultimate thing is they make a deal with Columbia. Jim Stewart wants out. Columbia is the biggest distributor in the world. Al reaches the pinnacle of his achievement because now he can get his records everywhere that Columbia can ship them, or so he thinks. Because soon after they make the deal, soon after Jim Stewart cashes out, the deal with Columbia goes south, and Stax finds that no matter what it presses up and delivers for distribution, it's not getting in the stores.
Right.
CBS denies responsibility, but there's lots of evidence that records weren't getting in stores, and that becomes a stranglehold.
We're speaking with Robert Gordon, the Grammy-winning Memphis music historian, about his book, Respect Yourself, about the story of Stax Records. Why do you call it Respect Yourself? You say this song is Stax's legacy. Why?
Well, it's a beautiful and simple message, and I think it is the heart of what went on at Stax. When Jim and Estelle opened their door to black people, despite the city telling them not to, it was a matter of respect, you know, and respect is at the core of good relations between people. And mm-hmm. that's what Stax was. And you hear that in the music.
Staple Singers with Respect Yourself. The book is Respect Yourself, Stax Records and the Soul Explosion by my guest Robert Gordon, the Grammy-winning Memphis music historian. So, Robert, in sum, it's not just a Memphis story. It becomes an American story. Is it an American tragedy, or is there a second act?
Well, there's a third act. It's a story with two triumphs and two terrible tragedies, two fortunes made, both fortunes lost. And then the building was closed in 75. In 1989, they were tearing the building down. And then, like, 10 years after that, maybe 15 years after that, they began to rebuild the building brick by brick from the original design. And now stands the Stax Museum of American Soul Music, which is really just a front for the organization's educational efforts. It began as an after-school program for kids in the neighborhood to get help with their homework, and it's turned into a charter school with six or seven grades. Last year, the second graduating class finished. For the second time in a row, they had 100% college participation, you know, people going on to college.
Wow.
And one girl last year got a full ride to Brown. So there was a long, awful quiet on that corner that has been followed by the return of the spirit, frankly. I mean, it is the rehabilitation of the spirit of all the good that was at Stax.
Well, that's great to hear. And, of course, there is the music, classic American music from the vaults there at Stax Records. There is so much more that you'll find in Robert Gordon's book, Respect Yourself, Stax Records and the Soul Explosion. Robert, great to have you with us today.
Thank you, John. It's been a real blast, and you seem like a soul man.
Soundcheck is a production of WNYC in New York. Find out more about our show at soundcheck.org or just download the new WNYC mobile app. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.